Well, on vacation, I found out that you can run, and you can hike, and you can walk, and you can swim, and you can dive, but you can't hide from the world. And there are times when, believe me, I understand why people want to turn the radio off, cancel their newspaper subscriptions, and just get away from the violence, the chaos, the hatred, the things that we human beings do to each other, and often, if not always, motivated by a fierce certainty that we are right and those other pigs and dogs are just wrong. God, I wanted to escape that. And there's something that acknowledges that desire to flee, to escape. But my life is spent trying vainly, and probably in both senses of the word vain, trying vainly to bring order out of the chaos. To try to take all of the chaos of experience, of contesting forces and ideas, and give them some semblance of order by wrestling with the words. But putting the words together isn't the same thing as putting the world together. It's just a first step to try to understand all of the ways that our world challenges us. And Aristotle, in talking about tragedy, said that tragedy evokes in us a contradictory reaction. We want to approach out of pity and compassion, and we want to flee out of terror. And I try to form coherent systems that will hold together to allow me to try to grasp all of these forces in the world, these forces of anger and hatred and certainty. But they don't stay together. I'll fashion order out of the chaos, but it's like molding sand. When I lift the object up to my eyes, it falls apart. It breaks into shards, into a terrible hallucinogenic kaleidoscope of jagged edges that are always moving and cutting. And that's what I was feeling on my vacation as I watched and heard and received emails and was connected almost 20 hours a day, I slept a little bit, to what is going on in the war in the Middle East. And my purpose today is not specifically to talk about the war in the Middle East, though I'll be touching, or I'm sorry, the wars in the Middle East. There are somewhere between 3 and 5 going on at the moment. But this is, in fact, not a political sermon. This is looking at the hatred that we use to dehumanize others, to be able to murder, to bomb, to destroy, without a sense of conscience, in fact, just the opposite, with a sense of accomplishment. And that's a terrible tragedy. I'm not a pacifist. There are certainly times when I think people have to fight, but that's always a tragedy. It is never holy. It is never blessed. It is never sacred when lives are taken. The rage that people feel, the righteousness that people feel, the passion that people feel, is no good confirmation of being right. Almost every monstrous act in the world is done with a clear conscience. There are psychopaths who do bad things for bad reasons, and they know that they're doing bad things. But most terror, state terror, individual terror, network terror, is done by people with fierce certainty. I've said before, I will say today, and I will say endless times, that of all the biblical commandments, the most difficult one is to walk humbly. Because most of us walk with tremendous certainty about the righteousness of our cause. You can't and shouldn't look at what's going on in the Middle East and see dead children and feel any sense of equanimity. Dead children are dead children. They are not Jewish children or Muslim children or Arab children. They are not Lebanese children or Israeli children or Iraqi children. They are children. And if our hearts do not open up and feel pity and want, in some sense, both to approach and to flee, then we don't have hearts. If we can, I think that one of the reasons that we get to have children and perfect grandchildren, we have to talk later, and perfect grandchildren, is it a grandson or granddaughter that's the perfect one? Great grandson. Okay, my granddaughter. Okay, good. So we don't have to fight after all. If we don't feel that pity and compassion, if our hearts are not hurt in seeing their misery, their deprivation, and their deaths, we have no hope as a species. We are given children to remind us of pity and compassion and responsibility, because if we can't see it in children, how are we going to see it in grown-ups with all of our defenses and all of our prickliness and all of the ways that we have developed to try to keep ourselves safe and to hide our vulnerability? With a child, it is a reminder that we are connected one to another, and a child's death is always a tragedy and a reminder of our common humanity. I also need to tell you what position I come from, because that is important in what I'm about to say. I teach at the University of Judaism. I teach a course in anti-Semitism. It's not a how-to course. The world doesn't need that. And no, I did not invite Mel Gibson to come and address my class, but when I read who did, when I read that a rabbi had invited him to address the congregation Yom Kippur, I knew exactly who it was, because I used to edit his newsletter. Not Mel Gibson's, the rabbis. You need to know that when I bring any kind of analysis, I am informed, because I teach Middle East, I teach Islamic studies, but I am not unbiased. I have family living in Israel. I have family that survived the Shoah, the Holocaust. I was the president of a large fundraising group that supports a hospital in Israel, the Hospital of Tel HaShamir. I have had dinner with and spoken privately with Ehud Olmert. And I also spent 2 years in the Muslim Arab world and was treated wonderfully with love and with compassion. I also studied with an imam, the sheikh, the imam of Nabul, and have been hugely touched by the kindness, the compassion, the generosity of people in the Muslim community and people who are Arab. 2 weeks ago, I conducted an interfaith discussion at the University of Judaism with an imam with the unfortunate first name of Jihad, but a very nice young man who is informed and open and in dialogue and in compassion. And so, knowing this about me, from the very depths of my being, I have been hurt and offended by so much email and so many articles and op-ed pieces that I have read that I consider to be hate speech from both sides. We are not dealing with Arab dogs and Jewish pigs. We are not dealing with some subhuman vermin. People express their experience in often terrible and inappropriate ways, and we get to say, as human beings, no, that's hate speech. That's hate speech that comes out of both sides. That's intolerance that comes out of both sides. Now, when I say both sides, let me be clear. I don't make a moral equivalence argument between what happens in a war, however tragic it is, and the targeting of civilians. And I don't make a moral equivalence between Hezbollah and the Palestinians. The Palestinians are a group and a problem that has to be solved with justice. I'm a believer in a two-state solution with people living in peace with each other, and I believe that it is possible despite all of the missed opportunities. It is a problem that must be solved. I don't have the same feelings with Hezbollah. Hezbollah does not have a legitimate place at the table. They have not been dispossessed, and their sole aim is the destruction of Israel as a Jewish state. And their tactics are not anything that I can support. That is a political movement. That is not a religion. That is not a race. That is not a people. It's so distressing how easily we fall into the negation of the humanity of others. It's so distressing that we live so often with a sense of denial of the anger, sometimes the hatred, and the irrational phobias in our own hearts. And I understand talking at all about Mel Gibson is low-hanging fruit and it's much too easy a target, but I need to do it just briefly. He himself is not important. I don't much care what he thinks or what he feels. But he is a good example of what is latent, not simply in terms of anti-Semitism, which is latent in many communities, but all of the phobias that we human beings carry around that make a distinction between the worth of my wonderful self and your perverse selves. It's all of the xenophobia and sexism and homophobia, all of the diminishment of other human beings because of things that are both extrinsic and intrinsic that let us cancel out part of, if not all, of their humanity so that we can do terrible things to them and feel good about it. I believe that Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12-step program has it right. I don't think we can begin to therapize the anger, the rage, the fear, the irrational hatreds that we have until we admit to them. When Mel Gibson says, well, I spewed out all of this anti-Semitic stuff, but I didn't mean it, it came from somewhere. And I don't think that you deal with issues of forgiveness and contrition until you kind of have faced the demons within. And we all have them. I'm not singling him out. He had the camera, and he had the microphone, and he has the celebrity. So I'm just using him as an example. You can't just say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it, or it was just the alcohol speaking. Jay Leno had a very interesting line on that, which I actually accept. In vino veritas, not really. Jay Leno asked to the women in his audience, so is your experience that when men are drunk in bars that they tell the truth? Married? No, I'm not married. No. Children? I've never seen any children, and you're the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life. In vino, id. But not necessarily veritas. It came from somewhere deep within, and it's not unique to him. We all grew up with some kinds of prejudices, something that we were carefully taught in the Rodgers and Hammerstein song, how we were carefully taught to hate and fear, and the hate and the fear are related one to another. And it is part of that human and inhuman condition. And I believe that we begin a journey of healing by turning inside and doing a frank and fearless inventory of our own prejudices, our own judgments, the conclusions that we make about them out there, and those dirty, you fill in the blanks. And it's so interesting and discouraging at the same time. From the beginning of our recorded history, it's always been the same charges against the other. The other are dirty, they are dishonest, and they are oversexed. Just think about it. Think about all the, it's in the Bible about the Ishmaelites. That's Arabs. And I say that not to prove that it's true, but it's the same charges that are made against Jews, against blacks, against Mexicans, against any them that we want to come up with. Always the same charges. Leads me to believe that human beings may be dirty, dishonest, and oversexed, but that's part of the universal condition and not the condition simply of the other out there. From the beginning, there was racial and tribal enmity. It shows up in the Bible. From the beginning, it is David and Goliath who represented the Philistines. That's Hebrew for Palestinians. It is Samson whose last words in Judges 16, yes, a Unitarian is quoting scripture by number, who pulls down the pillars on himself and says, "Let me die with the Palestinians." There is a terrible, self-destructive hatred that we can create and nourish and tend in our hearts. And one of the tragedies of humanity is sometimes it feels good to nourish that flame of rage. There's a wonderful line in the movie, I'll forget the name of the movie, but Richard Dreyfuss and Mason and Goodbye Girl, where she says, "I'm really mad and I don't want to lose it." And doesn't mean I don't want to lose it in terms of anger. Doesn't want to lose that heartburn, that rage, that sense of righteousness and victimhood. We can have intelligent discussions about very difficult issues of race, of religion, of tactics. We can have intelligent conversations, and I hope in 2 weeks when the rabbi and I lead a forum in talking about the Middle East, past, present, and with any luck at all, future, that we will have an intelligent and thoughtful conversation between ourselves and with the larger community. It is possible to do. One can question policies without being an anti-Semite. One can question American policies without being a traitor. Let me go back just, well, I guess a really long time for some of you. Go back to World War II. I consider myself to be a patriot. I love my country. It is discussable if the firebombing of Dresden and the nuclear devices, bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki were a good idea, a terrible idea, a tactic, a strategy, or a war crime. To discuss it doesn't mean that you hate your country. To discuss it intelligently and with respect for differences of opinion, to be involved in the conversation is a sign of commitment. To talk about the tactics that are used on civilians, targeting different areas, those are legitimate conversations. What isn't and what the key to finding out whether a conversation is going, because I have received email that you probably would believe, just filled with hate, filled with twists, and filled with lies from both sides. And in order to be informed, we have to be able to talk. And in order to speak, we have to be able to kindly discern truth from propaganda and to find the humanity in the other side, because it is my experience that most human beings are decent. Most human beings do not want their children killed, do not want their children martyred, do not celebrate the martyrdom of their children, even with a check from a foreign government. It does not compensate. I hate that image of Samson pulling down the pillars and bringing catastrophe to himself and to his adversaries as one last act. It is a feeling and a sensation that many people in many countries have. If we can't win, we will do something apocalyptic. It is a sense that is going on in the fundamentalist Christian world, the militant fundamentalist Muslim world, and even in Jewish apocalyptics. And it is terribly dangerous. I think the best way to end a talk on hate is the Gandhi quote, which is, an eye for an eye, and soon the whole world is blind. Hatred blinds us. It blinds us to the humanity in each other, and maybe even more tragically, it blinds us to our own humanity and lets us do things with terrible rage and fierce certainty and a sense of our righteousness that are, in fact, monstrous. We need to begin with ourselves, our own prejudices, our own rage, our own sense of entitlement, our own sense of victimization, and build from that some understanding of the near other and of the farther away other, and to be able to see in the other not an inhuman monster, but a sister, a brother, a child, a grandchild, some human being with whom we can relate, not a them. There is no group called the Jews. Spectrum of Jewish belief and behavior goes from far left to far right across a religious spectrum that is huge. When a colleague of mine said, well, because of my pro-Palestinian position, the Jews came and picketed me, I said, which Jews? The Jews are not one group. The Arabs are not one group. The Muslims are not one group. There are people and groups that do terrible things. We get to sit in judgment of them. But we begin with ourselves. And we begin by trying to understand the rage and the fear and the xenophobia that seems to come with the human condition. Unlike animals, we have instincts, and we have hormones, and we have rages. But unlike animals, we also have choices and moral responsibility, and we can turn away from where our rage takes us. We can turn away from the blindness. We can turn away from those things that close up our hearts and close up our eyes and open our eyes and open our hearts and open our arms to see other people and their pain, their hopes, their flaws, and their fragility, and to know that we are part of the same family. Yes, we see the near more easily than the far. We see the similar more easily than we see what appears on the surface to be the dissimilar. But we can build step by step, moment for moment, choice by choice, to attempt to build bridges of understanding and tolerance and acceptance and love. It doesn't mean absolute moral relativism, that any monstrous act is just understandable and therefore okay, but we begin by trying to understand the context and then remediate the situation. That's the power of human choice. That's the power that we have from time to time to choose love over hate and openness over closed hearts and closed minds.